So anything, any drug that's being suggested during pregnancy has to undergo long-term studies. And long-term studies have not been done, as Deanna says. There's just been horrendous things that have been done and have been recommended to pregnant women and with disastrous results.
Everyone watching and listening, welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronika Kirilenko. Pregnancy and breastfeeding are becoming increasingly medicalized. While acknowledging that we do not know very much about the effects of taking most medicines during pregnancy, the CDC recommends pregnant and breastfeeding women stay up to date with their COVID shots, including the latest booster, and also take a just-cleared RSV vaccine. At the same time, entities such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are heavily investing in the maternal vaccine market as the industry shifts toward mRNA technology. How much good will come out of these efforts? Today, I'm speaking with two exceptional medical experts with the Canadian COVID Care Alliance, which recently launched a project called Protect Pregnancy and Breastfeeding. My guests today are Deanna McLeod, and an evidence-based data analysis expert, and Mary Sharp, a veteran midwife with the College of Midwives of Ontario. Ladies, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Veronica.
It's a pleasure. Deanna, let's start with you. Please tell me about the project, Protect Pregnancy and Breastfeeding. What's its purpose and what are you trying to protect mothers and babies from?
So I think the angle that I bring to this particular campaign is one where I have a medical research firm. And we're continually reviewing, ongoing literature, medical literature, as well as trials that are in development. And one of the interesting things, or the alarming things that I saw, was a shift towards maternal vaccination. And so one of the things that we've always, that's always guided the area of maternal care has been the precautionary principle when it comes to drugs, which means that if you're uncertain about the risks of a drug, then you don't take it. And so that's why, women have been told not to, eat sushi and change cat litter and smoke and drink wine. I mean, I don't know, Veronica, if it was the same thing for you, but all of a sudden it's like, your ability to do things that you normally do are limited, all on the basis of the fact that we don't want to harm the developing child in our womb. So I was actually quite shocked when I saw all of these trials beginning to research vaccination in pregnancy, particularly because the pregnancy continuum and all the stages of development of a child are so delicate and intricate. I think Mary can probably speak to that. To see somebody begin to test vaccines in this particular area, it was very, very concerning for me. And of course, through the COVID-19 moment, what we had was public health officials recommending these shots in pregnant women. And I'll get into a little bit more about these shots and why they're concerning, particularly maybe a little bit later on. But, we quickly looked at the literature and we found that absolutely no randomized controlled trials, which are the way that you prove safety, were conducted in pregnant women before they were actually rolled out into them. All the while, public health officials declared them both safe and effective without any data. So there's a very shocking shift right here. So usually in medicine, what you do is you prove safety, you prove efficacy, and you make sure that the benefits outweigh the risks before you move forward. And that involves considerable study. And here we are, not studying it at all, taking something that's fairly high risk because it's a genetic vaccine and administering it to women and calling it safe and effective. It was an incredible, shocking breach in good medical practice and ethics. And so the team at CCCA decided that we needed to do something about that, especially because, the COVID-19 shot is now just one of five recommended vaccines and maternal vaccines. Now, the childhood pediatric schedule, your child can get up to about 100 shots if you're in the US. over the course of their young life. And here we are moving now into what I would call, you know, from a business side, a new market with the likes of Bill and Melinda Gates getting their eyes on the womb and starting to load up the vaccines there too. And so, you know, maybe Mary can kind of speak to a little bit more about this, but that is so concerning because these shots are under tested and life in the womb is so delicate. And the effects of interfering with life in the womb and the developmental stages can have long-term impacts. And those have not been studied, all the while women are being told that these shots are safe.
So well, that's of course, this is the new domain of scientific knowledge. But can you please summarize the current scientific understanding regarding the risk-benefit ratio of COVID vaccines during pregnancy and breastfeeding?
Oh, the risk-benefit ratio? Well, it would be hard to give you a clear risk-benefit ratio because you'd have to study it in order to have one of those, and we haven't studied it. So what's interesting is they rush these shots to the market with no randomized controls trial, meaning that usually what you do before you approve a vaccine is you ensure that it is safe, effective, and that the benefits outweigh the risks. And so what they did was they just started using it without ever proving anything. And so at the time, they also, they did conduct a randomized controlled trial, but it was really only to study the safety. And it was so small that it really wasn't able to actually tell us anything very much. So all that we have is basically observational data, which is low quality evidence. And it is showing some shocking indicators of harm. You know, if you look at the CDC VAERS database, what you can see is a hockey stick increase in miscarriages with the rollout of the vaccine. You know, if we look at things like stillbirths in some of the population-based studies, for instance, in the UK or Scotland, you can actually see an increase in stillbirths. But again, one of the tricks that pharma uses is that in order to detect safety issues, you actually have to monitor safety. So if they don't monitor safety very carefully, then there's nothing to really prove. And so it becomes very, very difficult, as Mary said, to make informed choices because we just have a dearth, like a lack of safety data. And we can't actually make statements like, you know, the risks outweigh the cost. Now, we do know that these shots are ineffective. They don't work in adults. They don't work in everybody. You have to keep continual boosters that wane right away. They don't stop transmission. They don't prevent infection. And they haven't been proven to prevent severe infection in pregnant women. And so, you know, we have indicators of harm from the little safety testing that we have done. And we have an ineffective vaccine. So I would probably say, the benefit risk ratio is not in favor of these vaccines at all.
Absolutely. Mary, every single healthcare authority in the West, as well as vaccine makers, claim that there is no causal link between COVID vaccines and pregnancy complications. Based on your professional experience and judging from what you hear from other midwives, do you believe there might be a connection? And if so, what pattern have you observed or heard about midwives observing in their patients?
Yes, it's really hard for me to answer that question directly, but what I want to say is I've been practicing as a midwife since 1978, and there has always been this attitude towards the pregnant body and the growing infant inside that we need to be first do no harm, that we need to avoid, and a lot of pregnant women will especially avoid, as Deanna was saying, any drugs, any alcohol, any tobacco. They will change their diets to improve their health and improve the possible health of their infant. So there's always been this direction. And we have some very, very serious lessons that the obstetrical world has learned over the last since the 40s, really. You of course know about thalidomide. Thalidomide was a drug that was encouraged to be taken by pregnant women during their pregnancy to reduce nausea. So everybody wanted to take that, and we know what happened with that babies were born, who'd been exposed to thalidomide during their mother's pregnancies. They were born with shortened limbs and all sorts of difficulties. Another drug that was highly recommended to pregnant women was diethylstilbestrol, DES. And it was a drug that was recommended to prevent prematurity in infants. Now that drug resulted in reproductive abnormalities in women who gave birth to female children. And those effects are generational. So we see when we're looking at pregnancy, we not only have to look at, as Deanna said, the very, very delicate stages of development, when we know that certain drugs can be very dangerous to babies at certain times during their development in utero, but also we don't know the long-term effects on infants. So any drug that's being suggested during pregnancy has to undergo long-term studies, and long-term studies have not been done, as Deanna says. So we have lessons from the past. We have many, many, many lessons from the past. There's just been horrendous things that have been done and have been recommended to pregnant women and with disastrous results. So I just have always said, and Deanna knows how I feel about this, that this body is pretty remarkable. The pregnant body, the development of the infant is a delicate process, and we need to not disturb this process. We need to support it and not disturb it, because the disturbances that I see, the cesarean births, the inductions of labor, the instrumental births, all of these kinds of things have serious risks to them, and they interfere with the normal hormonal output that pregnant women have during their pregnancies and during their labors and during their birth, and really interfere with the connection that the mother has with their baby. So it's a huge area to talk about, and has to be approached with great care. So
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Deanna, you mentioned that there were serious indications of harms done to pregnant women and their babies, those who received COVID vaccines. Would you please elaborate on that?
So yes, there's been some serious indicators of harm, and they range very widely. One of the things that was announced or recognized by the World Health Organization recently, and I'm just gonna qualify my statements. All that we have are observational reports of instances and harms. And we have no proof that these harms are associated with the vaccine, because we did not do the proper studying to prove that they were safe before they went to market. So now, after market, we have no randomized controlled trials. So we can't actually say that these things are causally linked to the vaccine. However, there have been an incredible number of suspected vaccine injuries associated with these. And I think the most egregious and shocking of all of them is the VAERS data, where it actually shows that children were killed in the womb and they miscarried. Now, when a woman is pregnant and is wanting her child, that child's life is very precious. And to think that we would provide or give an experimental medication without checking first that it would cause a miscarriage or death, or that that would even be an acceptable indicator in a study or an outcome. You know, I think the whole idea of do no harm means that we want to minimize risk and prevent risk. So the fact that we're actually allowing a child to get this with the potential, without having studied that it could increase miscarriages in a properly controlled trial, is very shocking. And of course, the VAERS data is great, but it isn't sufficient in order to ensure safety. And so what we can see is that children are dying. There's reports of children being born premature. There's reports of stillbirths. There's reports of children having, you know, aortal and skeletal deformations. There's reports of, there's population-based data that reports increases in heart disease in the UK. For instance, the World Health Organization says, oh, there's suddenly like this increase in heart disease in newborns in the UK. And you know, nobody's connecting the dots between the vaccines because you're not allowed, right? It's not politically correct to connect the dots between those vaccines that were rolled out and all of these reports that are occurring. And unfortunately, one of the things that I think is particularly egregious is that, you know, we're only really looking at these very shocking harms, which I would call deformities, death, premature size, heart disease, like, I mean, very, very terrible things. Whereas we should have conducted the randomized controlled trials and been monitored. I mean, A, we should never conduct randomized controlled trials in children, in pregnant women, because of the delicate nature of it. But if we were to recommend drugs, then they should be proven safe, and we should be, you know, carefully monitoring the children. You know, they did do one randomized controlled trial after the drug was rolled out. And the extent of monitoring that they did for the child was to give the mother a phone app. And so she was supposed to look on her phone and check off boxes to see how she and her child were feeling. You know, no monitoring of the child, no monitoring of the heartbeat, no monitoring to see if there's, you know, the pulse goes up or down, like absolutely no fetal monitoring whatsoever in these trials. And they think that this is acceptable medicine. So, again, and we have a fantastic report that was developed by a bunch of the scientists at CCCA, and it goes into great detail listing the many, many harms. And so if anybody wants to have a fairly good read, it's about, I don't know about how many pages long, is it at 40 pages long? And there's a whole section of potential harms and reported harms that are indicated in there. It's quite shocking, and it's quite disturbing. And, you know, proponents of the vaccine will argue, well, you can't prove that any of these things are associated with the vaccine. But I think we have to go back to the point where the time to prove these things was before it was rolled out, not after it was rolled out. So,
yes, exactly. Can either of you ladies share any insights into the mechanisms or potential causes behind these egregious harms to moms and babies? Why is it happening? Mary, maybe you.
Well, just to say, I mean, historically, there's a lot of things that we don't know. And I'm a scientist. I have a PhD. And I, when I'm approaching any problem, I look at the risks, the benefits, and also the uncertainties. And there has to be a certain kind of humility when you're approaching any scientific project, all the things that you do not know. And I think that there's been a jump to supposed knowing here without appropriate investigation. I mean, we know that most vaccines, before they're rolled out, are tested for up to 10 years. That's usually the length of time. With this particular COVID-19 vaccine, these vaccines were rolled out within months in some cases. So I take the long look. I've been around for a while, and I've seen over the years, women suffer very seriously. Pregnant people who were pregnant and gave birth to babies that were harmed, they were harmed themselves. It was at one point just considered it's fine to smoke cigarettes. That's fine. We know that's well established. Alcohol as well. When I was first pregnant with my first child in 1970, people said, oh, have another drink, Mary. You'll help your baby have a nice sleep. Well, we know better now. But those are some things that I can say that I've seen. And I've been shocked to see that pregnant women are encouraged to get the Tdap vaccine. They're encouraged to get the flu vaccine. They're encouraged to get the COVID-19 vaccine. They're encouraged now to get the RSV vaccine. GBS, which is my study, my area of study, now there's a vaccine for GBS, group B streptococcus colonization during pregnancy. Get a vaccine for that. Meningitis vaccine, perhaps. They're just more and more and more vaccines. I think the pregnant body is now open season. And I that's a very crude way of putting it, but I am extremely alarmed. Not only are there increasing numbers of vaccines that have been suggested, and I don't think the long-term studies have been done properly, but also there hasn't been any sort of investigation that I know of the interaction of all of these vaccines, or when during the pregnancy they would be more harmful than at other times. So there are a lot of things I think we don't know. And for midwives and other healthcare practitioners to recommend these, it's very hard when Public Health Agency of Canada and other bodies are saying, go ahead, take these. It's very, very hard. How does the individual midwife, and I don't know all the studies. Deanna has a great handle in a lot of the studies, but I don't think we have enough information for me to ever feel comfortable saying to a pregnant person, yes, you should take these vaccines. I don't have enough information.
Have you tried to convey your concerns to the regulatory bodies?
I have. Yes, I have.
And what did you hear from them?
Well, not much. I think that
surprisingly,
I think there has to be because I think everybody's captured by the larger agencies, and I think it's very problematic, and I think there needs to be a very, very deep investigation on all levels. So,
how do you feel about the prospects of this investigation?
I don't know. I'll keep trying. I know Deanna and I and others are really trying to just say, I don't want to be against anything, but I don't want to be for something that I don't have enough information about. I think we need information. And in midwifery, there's this principle of informed choice, not just informed consent, not just this is what the vaccine is, do you want it or not? Please, let's talk about the pros, the cons, and what I would call the uncertainties. And I would say there are a lot of uncertainties. And maybe in the context of that kind of discussion, maybe that's when people can make choices. But not when some body is saying, this is what you should do. This is the right thing to do. So I don't know whether I'm making myself clear.
Yes, Deanna, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
I was trying to jump in, but I think Mary mentioned something that our bodies have been captured, and one of the things that we do, we're continually reviewing and analyzing studies, and when you see a certain type of reporting where the benefits are declared or exaggerated and the risks are either not studied or omitted, and where you get declarations of safety and efficacy in the absence of proper testing, like we have here, you can immediately suspect that there are competing interests at play. And so one of the things that we like to do is we like to actually trace down what those competing interests are. So, what we would say is follow the money. I'm sure you've heard that saying, right? And so one of the things that I think is particularly concerning with this is that the World Health Organization, depends very largely on funding from the Gates Foundation. And not only that, so there's two regulatory bodies or two main players that determine the direction by which we would manage the COVID-19 pandemic. And that was the US government, specifically the NIAID and the World Health Organization. Those were the two people steering the ship at an international level. And interestingly enough, the World Health Organization is largely funded by the philanthropist Gates, mm-hmm. And has incredible ties to vaccine companies and makes returns on investment. So he's no philanthropist. He's a money launderer for the vaccine companies, right? You can't say that the vaccine companies are controlling the World Health Organization or everybody would be up in arms, right? But if you say Bill Gates, the philanthropist, is giving all the money to the World Health Organization. That is the group that sets public policy, and they conduct training seminars where they take all the public health people from around the world and train them on how to be good public health people. I.e. how to promote vaccines and i.e. how to declare safety and efficacy in the absence of testing. I mean, this is an established practice, and they have training modules, and you can go online and look at all these things. And then you have the NIAID. And interestingly enough, based on the Bayh-Dole Act in the 80s, they actually make profits off of products that they develop in partnership with pharmaceutical companies. And so they actually have partnered with Moderna in developing these vaccines. They have a patent on the spike protein. And so every time Anthony Fauci got up there and recommended vaccines for pregnant women, he was making money. He was cashing in. These are incredible competing interests. And I think that really, everybody, but especially expecting parents, really need to pause and consider these competing interests when they're being presented with these recommendations for vaccination in general, but COVID-19 vaccines in particular. And anybody who ever tells you that something is always safe and always effective for everybody, just stop and run away right there, because that's never the case, And mm-hmm. if they're not willing to take the time to engage in a discussion around informed choice, they probably don't have your best interests in mind. And if they're willing to tell you that these under-tested vaccines are safe and effective for pregnancy, full well knowing that they haven't done the rigorous study that's required to actually say that, to support that statement, again, I think you really have to consider whether we can trust these entities now and really make sure that you do your research. In our video, what we do is we basically say, take the time to make sure that you're at risk, because a lot of the pregnant women were never at risk in the first place. They weren't at risk of severe disease because their junk science was just as bad in determining risk of, when they categorize women as high risk. Make sure that it works and make sure that it's safe. And I think, coming back to what Mary mentioned earlier, the precautionary principle should really, really guide choices in pregnancy. And if you can't establish the safety, and I say establish meaning with rigorous safety testing, if there's any indication of harm, then the best position is to avoid that medication altogether. Mm-hmm. And I think especially so considering, these competing interests that unfortunately have seemed to capture public health.
Freedom is the cure. You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
How would you see these mass vaccination campaigns affected birth rates, and what might be the long-term consequences of this vaccination drive?
We cover this in our resource guide, and it's very concerning that there is some indicators that potentially fertility is being affected by these shots. And I know, Veronica, you asked a little bit earlier, you know, what the mechanism of action could be related to these shots, you know, in terms of general harms to the developing child, but also in terms of fertility. These particular vaccines are not even vaccines. They're what we would call gene therapy or biologics, which is basically what they do is they take synthetic mRNA. And I say synthetic because it's been produced in the back shop, and one of the components of the mRNA has been replaced with something that doesn't biodegrade as quickly. Mm-hmm. So they make this Franken mRNA that doesn't disappear in your body, and it continues, and it's delivered via these lipid nanoparticles. And it goes into your cells, and it basically makes something like the spike protein. Now, of all, I don't know who thought of this, but it what they do is they take the most pathogenic component of the virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and they tell your body to develop this pathogen in copious amounts, in trillions of copies. And this spike protein is able to turn on inflammatory pathways by three mechanisms. So it's incredibly inflammatory. And so I'm just going to stop right there and just consider two things. So one, these lipid nanoparticles, because they're made of lipids, they deposit in the ovaries of women. So if you look at a biodistribution curve, like if you look at the biodistribution of these lipid nanoparticles after somebody's taken it within the first 48 hours, there's a high concentration of these lipid nanoparticles in the ovaries. And what they do is they basically cause the cells there to express proteins, which are foreign, that causes the immune system, your immune cell, to recognize these foreign proteins and to attack your ovaries. So anybody who's involved in fertility, and this is not my area of expertise, but we do have somebody that was on the team, Jim Thorpe, who does have expertise in this area. Anybody who knows anything about fertility knows that inflammation in the ovaries in somebody who's of reproductive age is a very, very bad thing. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is we're causing this accumulation of lipid nanoparticles and this development of spike protein, which triggers your immune system to attack your ovaries. So the mechanism of action, the underlying reproductive issues is definitely there. We know that they did no reproductive toxicity studies, reprotoxicity studies on these shots before they were rolled out to people of reproductive age. We definitely know that menstruation has been changed. Like, women report all sorts of irregularities in menstruation. And we do have some indicators that it could be affecting fertility, although it's very difficult to collect this data in a reliable way because there's so many delays in reporting. But there have been some indicators of harm there. So again, you know, when we look at stuff like this, we say, is there a potential, a reasonable mechanism of action? Yes. Are there early indicators of harm? Yes. Are there safety concerns generally? Yes. So then the precautionary principle would come into play, and we would say, stay away from those things. You know, when it comes to a developing fetus, again, we're talking about the delicate, the delicate, you know, I mean, it's just so intricate, a child developing in the womb, you know, all these processes, these interrelated processes occurring all at once. And again, if you introduce something, the lipid nanoparticles can go through the placenta. If you introduce inflammation in the form of spike protein, or even if these shots are accumulating in ovaries of the baby, we don't know enough about what's happening with this interaction, but any type of inflammation at that stage could be very damaging. Any type of, you know, the lipid nanoparticles and the mRNA going into the placenta is very dangerous. And I think the last concern that I would have, just based on a mechanistic level, is that, you know, there's contaminants in this thing. So what they found recently is there's DNA plasmids. And so the DNA, if you give mRNA, it doesn't go into your genes, but if you your DNA, but if you give DNA, it can actually go into your DNA. And so therefore you can have this long-term production of the spike protein. So this child, this developing child, might have chronic inflammation for the rest of their life, theoretically. But again, we wouldn't know because nobody bothered to test it. And I think
why not? How do you explain it? Why wasn't it tested? It was supposed to be tested.
Well, I think that normal drugs get tested, but In the 80s, what they did was they basically gave pharmaceutical companies or manufacturers of vaccines a liability shield when it came to vaccines. And what that means is that they are never going to be sued. They can't be sued for anything that's harmful, anything that's unsafe. So if you're harmed by a vaccine, you have no ability, you have no recourse to sue the manufacturer. They've been given liability shield. So what happens whenever a manufacturer is very concerned about being sued is they make sure that whatever they put on the market is safe. So what you see is since the 80s to now, the standards for safety have diminished over time. They went from a randomized controlled trial that's conducted for, you know, I would say maybe 5 years, you know, if it's an unborn or the, you know, the developing child, you know, it would almost have to go to puberty. I mean, who knows what kind of long-term impacts any type of thing could have. But you go from having randomized controlled trials to the standard being not even a placebo-controlled trial. Like most vaccines don't have placebo-controlled trials, and most vaccines only ever measure or monitor safety for 7 days, like the COVID-19 shots. So what you have is you have industry who's basically given a carte blanche, and they can produce toxic compounds without any recourse. And that, again, goes back to this legislation that occurred, you know, in the 80s, where we gave manufacturers liability coverage. They're not liable for any type of actions or safety issues with their products. And so you see an explosion in the number of vaccines. Again, 100 shots for a kid under five. You know, you're seeing now they're like targeting the womb. We've got 5 vaccines already. And, you know, respiratory vaccines are among the most lucrative because, you know, you can convince pregnant women that they're forever at risk. It doesn't matter whether they have natural immunity or not. And that every season there's going to be a terrible variant that they need to protect themselves and their baby from. And then they're going to, you know, push these shots yearly. You know, that's what's happening now with the RSV and the flu and the COVID-19 shot. So, I mean, until we close that gap, until we actually make sure that they're going to be liable for the harms that they cause, I think what we're going to do is see this kind of abusive thing where they co-opt, you know, public health agencies and continue to push these shots. I can't see where it's going to end personally.
Yeah. Well, clearly there are no indications that the healthcare agencies will change the tune and admit all the terrible harms inflicted on moms and babies. In this situation, what's the plan to ensure well-being of moms and babies? Mary.
Oh my goodness. I think we've got a lot of work to do, an awful lot of work to do. I mean, our agencies, such as the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, is holding an information session on November the 1st to talk about best practices when it comes to vaccines and pregnant people. So we can only imagine, I mean, I sent them a question saying, can you, in light of the past dangers of substances that were put into and encouraged to be put into pregnant women's bodies, can you guarantee that these vaccines will do no harm? I'll see what they answer. But I think that this is, we've got an awful lot of work to do. And there seems to be some sort of a, it's like motherhood and apple pie. I don't know what it is. There's some belief that vaccines are some sort of holy grail or some sort of a savior of the world. And the more we dig, I think, one of the things that our investigation's doing for me is investigating all vaccines over the history of time, looking at you know, how vaccines were pushed and encouraged, and did they actually save enormous numbers of lives, or was it just that hygiene and general and a good drinking water and general health improved these conditions that were so dire for many populations. Anyway, I think we have to have open discussions. And what's worried me, and I think Deanna and the people on our team, is that there's been very little opportunity to have open discussions about these things. The discussions have been censored, mm-hmm. and it seems as if you're treated as if in all other in any other scientific area, you want discussion, you want people to be suspicious of anything. You want to bring all the questions to the table and sift through them. And somehow in this area, that this phrase misinformation, somehow questioning is not seen as a good thing. And I think questioning is always a good thing. It's very important. So yeah. I think a lot of work to do.
For sure. What kind of work does need to be done?
Well, I'm encouraged by listening to Mary, because, you know, when Mary started off, you know, midwives, the use of midwives and birthing at home was, you know, really an oddity or an exception to the rule. It was definitely not the standard. And then, you know, through the work that she's done and a lot of her fellow midwives, you know, that became a viable option here in Canada. So I think that's proof that you can change the system, that a small group of determined people who are telling the truth and standing for truth can actually change things. And so I'm hoping that, you know, by producing the material that we did, Veronica, I really think that your audience is really going to love the video that we made. It's just 10 minutes. It kind of goes through all of this data. There's a one page or two that kind of highlights some of the key messages. And of course, the resource guide, which if anybody wants to dig in deep, they can kind of look through, and anybody who's, you know, more science minded can find all the references, the copious amounts of references that are included there. I think education is it. I think that we just need to speak out. I think we need to come together. I think we need to stand as a village to protect our children. There seems to be attacks on our children on many fronts these days. And I think that standing up, joining together and making our voices heard, and saying no, you know, take the time, choose well, is really what we need to do. And I think that truth is a lion and it will find its way if we let it out and if we let it go forward. So, I mean, that's my hope. My hope is that other people such as yourself will join us in circulating these messages. We're going to keep speaking. We're going to keep, you know, asking questions. We're going to keep, you know, inviting people to make intelligent choices that are good for themselves and their babies.
So how can people stay up to date with your work and with the projects that we're talking about?
Yeah, well, the CCCA has a dedicated a website page to this particular topic. It's called Protect Pregnancy and Breastfeeding. And if you go to Canadian COVID Care Alliance and you go to Protect Pregnancy and Breastfeeding, you'll see all of our work there. Every time we do an interview or every time we develop another resource guide, it's added to that page. So I think that's a fantastic thing for expecting parents to bookmark and to bring, you know, share it with your healthcare providers, share it with the people who are surrounding you in terms of support, start conversations. We hope to continue to populate that. Of course, there's also our social media. I'll provide all of that so that you can add it to your show notes. But, you know, we're continually kind of posting stuff along these topics and would love to hear, you know, from people who have questions or, you know, even maybe one day connect people who are looking to stand for informed choice and stand up against the pressure by public health officials to vaccinate at all stages, both, you know, during pregnancy and also afterwards.
Fantastic. Ladies, I would like to thank you so much for your time today. Everyone, that was Deanna McLeod and Mary Sharp. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine.